Once, while Christianity was young, and the disciples of the Master still walked the earth, there was a beautiful soul who dedicated his life to the search for the face of Christ. For one night, while lying in the stone cell where he had been cast by the pagan emperors, his spirit broken and his mind reeling with uncertainty, a wondrous vision appeared to this yearning one who had for so many years been sickened by the world's woe. On the wall of his stone cell, a great light appeared, and in its center gleamed the face of Christ, surrounded by a golden halo of glory. On the Master's brow was the wreath of thorns, and his great eyes, though filled with mortal agony, shone with divine compassion. From that day on, the soul of the Christian was filled with but one desire. There was but one thing in all the world to live for, but one quest which would form a worthy adventure, and this was to find again the glorious face that had shone from the wall of his cell. In some mysterious way, he was released from the prison, and taking his staff in hand, he vowed he would wander the world until he found again the face of his Master. Though the quest be long, though suffering and privation stand in the way, he resolved that nothing should deter him from this one thing to which his soul aspired. His travels took him into distant countries, through snowy wastes and over desert sands. Amid all the people of the world, he sought the face of the one he loved. One day, while wandering in a distant land, he heard of a wise one who, it was said, lived in a tiny hut made of the leaves of trees by the side of a great cliff, at whose base a mountain stream ran to the sea. After searching for many days in a strange and broken country, where it seemed that the gods of creation had hurled great rocks at the demons of darkness, the wanderer found the hut. In answer to his gentle tap upon the door, an aged figure appeared and asked in kindly tones, with deep sympathy in his voice, what the wanderer sought. The Christian, hungering for the kindness and sympathy so long denied, poured out from his heart to the kindly ears of the aged one his tale of anguish and disappointment. "My child," answered the aged one to the question the seeker had so often asked, "you seek to find the face of your Master. You seek to know where they have laid the Christ. But when they went to his tomb, they found it empty." "You are right, my son. He has not gone far away. He is near. And if you know where to seek truth, you shall find him and know his ways. Here is a little vial. In it is a mystic fluid which was prepared by the Essenes, the holy men of Mount Tabor. It is called the drink of the gods. If you but taste it, to you it shall be given to find the thing that you seek." He handed the little glass to the lonely pilgrim, who with a blessing of thanks accepted it. But the philosopher raised his hand in warning. "Wait. One other thing you must know. One thing you must promise before it shall be given to you to drink this mystic draught. Whatever you see reflecting this face, the face of Christ, that you must serve. To that you must make some sacrifice or give something that is precious to you." "That will I gladly," cried the hungry soul, as he bowed to receive the aged philosopher's blessing. Silently he passed out of the hut, bending low at the little doorway. Clasping the precious object close to his heart, he wandered off again into the wilderness. Reaching a quiet spot in a glorious valley, the Christian stopped, and sitting down upon a prostrate tree, took the little vial in his hands and gazed at the wondrous liquid of ever-changing light and color that sparkled in the tiny crystal shrine. Unsealing and opening it, the truth seeker, with a silent prayer, drained the contents. A strange feeling stole over him, and before his eyes there rose a golden haze of light, which benumbed for an instant every atom of his being. But in a moment the mist cleared, and the mystic gazed around in amazement, not unmixed with terror. As far as he could see in every direction, the world was a gleaming mass of light that seemed to stream out from the center of every living thing, and toward him from all directions there gazed millions of faces, all alike, each one of them the head of his crucified Savior. It seemed that each stick and stone shone forth with the glory of that face. Each bird and tree poured out its soul through those two sorrowful eyes and the glorious radiance of the light. The Christian fell upon his knees in prayer, for even the grains of sand on which he walked shone forth with the glorious countenance of his Lord. And each time he placed his feet upon the ground, he shuddered, for they fell upon the Master's face. At last a voice told him to rise and go on. As he proceeded, his heart faint within him, he came near to the foot of a monstrous mountain of black granite. Gazing across a lakelet, he saw a wondrous face, more glorious than all the others, shine out from the very side of the mountain. It was the face of Christ, and as he watched, thin streamlets of blood poured down the agonized countenance from beneath the wreath of thorns. The mystic stretched out his arms with a single cry, "Messiah!" He looked down into the waters which lapped the rocks at his feet, and there, gleaming from his own soul, from his own being reflected in the water, was the face of the Master. Each way he turned, the faces gazed at him. Even the air seemed filled with millions of them. Even in the clouds themselves, this glorious visage, with its divine sadness, gazed steadily at him, imprinting its agony and sorrow in every fiber of his soul. At last he could endure it no longer. Those eyes burned into his very being. They seemed to reproach him, and yet were filled with sweetness and with love. With a great cry, he raised his arms before his face and plunged headlong into the waters at his feet. He seemed to be twisting and floating in the midst of an endless darkness. Slowly he ceased to move, and at last the gray lights of earth began to flicker around him. He awakened and found himself sitting on the little plateau where he had come to drink of the crystal liquid in the tiny vial. The realization of what he had sought filled his soul with a truer understanding of the mystical Christ. And while the faces no longer gazed out at him, wherever he went, he could feel their presence. And at last he realized where his Master had been laid. Quickly climbing among the rocks, he sought again the hut of the philosopher to tell him of the wondrous vision he had seen. But the little rustic dwelling of leaves and sticks was gone. No trace of it could he find among the mountains. the little vial had vanished also. All remembrance slowly faded away. All that remained was the face he had sought. The years rolled on, from town to town, from little village to mystic hermitage. The Christian prophet made his way, and to everyone he told the mystery of the Christ as he had seen it. He told of the Last Supper, of how every day it is repeated that men may live. He told of the Christ and the blades of grass, how bird and beast reflect the light of the Master. He told of the spark that shines forth from the souls of men and the glorious faces in the grains of sand. And bowing humbly to each flower and shrub, he told how Christ dies daily that man's glory may increase. So through the years he was beloved of men. He went forth healing the sick, assisting all who suffered, giving words of cheer to those who were heavy laden, not for their sakes alone, and never for his own, but only that the divine hope, that his words of life would bring a smile to that sorrowing face that shone out from every creature that he served. He loved the birds and flowers, and even the wild animals served and honored him, for he loved them all. From beneath the little feathered breasts of the fowls of the air, the Christian saw the Master's face shining out with its wreath of thorns, and even the wolves that howled through the darkness of the night proclaimed the agony of Christ. The years rolled on, and still he served in the name of the Master's face. No longer had he friend or foe. No longer was one man different from another. The only thing he saw in others was that glorious light crucified by the sin and ignorance of the world. The passing years bent his back. The steps once strong and steady grew weak and halting. But still the Christian fulfilled his pledge to serve all things in which he had seen the Master's face. He loved the little children and was beloved by them, for in their laughing eyes he saw the sorrowing ones of the Master, and beneath the so-called joys of the world he saw a hungry heart. Amidst the bustling throngs of human beings, he beheld the lowly Nazarene begging kindness from the hands of men. Every ringlet waving around some glorious face whispered to this Christian's heart the mystery of the wreath of thorns. The world could not understand the soul of this lonely mystic, yet in spite of his strange ways and stranger words, he was loved of all, who, if they did not comprehend the vision of the seer, still felt in some mysterious way the power and glory of his work. He lived in a tiny cabin fashioned by his own hands out of rough lumber and rougher stones. He blessed even the stones as he tenderly placed them, for from each the eyes of his loved one seemed to shine. One night a voice spoke to him as he lay on his straw-covered cot, saying, "The Master calls you. Go ye to the tops of the distant mountains." The kindly old man rose from his pallet, and taking the staff he used to support his steps through the snow, he started alone in perfect faith into the storm, as he had many times before on his errands of mercy. Unknowing one said that this was his last trip, that the blinding tempest, the darkness, and the treacherous ravines would claim him as their own. But the seer knew otherwise, for though the storm burst among the mountains, and rocks overburdened by the snow were hurled headlong from the heights, the stones refused to fall on one who loved them all so well, and the darkness of the night was lighted by little gleaming sparks, that he might know his way. The wild creatures of the wood came forth and guided him. And as he wandered through the darkness, the blizzards and the snow, he raised his eyes to heaven, saying, "Father, why dost thou so protect me?" And the answer came, "I do not. The love that thou hast given forth serves thee in thine extremity." Once again the aged Christian stood as he had that wondrous night when he drank the liquid from the mystic vial the philosophers had given him. The rocks and snow gleamed again with the glory of their Lord, their radiance softened by the divine face he had served so long among men. But now the wreath of thorns was gone. It was no longer the face of agony, but one of sweet peace and divine encouragement. "O Master," cried the old man in ecstasy, "have I helped to bring to thy face this smile? And as far as the light could go, the millions of faces nodded in reply." The old Christian sank upon his knees, crying, "O Father, I thank thee, for my life indeed has not been in vain. My labors have had their reward. No greater than this could any man desire, for I have seen my Messiah smile." Then the great blizzards, so long hanging over the mountains, burst upon the lonely traveler, beating upon him with swirling sheets of snow and rapping hail, which, striking the rocks, broke and scattered like pebbles about him. For a little way, the solitary figure struggled against the elements, but at last sank by the wayside. As he gazed out in the falling snowflakes, he clasped his hands in prayer, for each glistening particle had turned into a shining face, and he was being buried, as it were, in a mantle made of the loving eyes of the master he had served. Suddenly a great hush fell over the mountains, and out of the heart of the storm appeared a celestial, white-robed figure, whose hand stretched forth to bring peace to the world. Slowly the faces vanished from the wood and stone, and the light gathered around the single stranger who was coming through the night. But with a cry of divine joy, the aged Christian staggered to his feet and, half falling, half running, with hands outstretched, he rushed toward the approaching figure. At last the glory of his work was crowned, for the wondrous form walking toward him was that of the Christ he so long had served. Heeding not the rough stones, he fell on his knees amidst the driving snow before the Christ, and clasping the hem of his raiment, kissed it. Without a word, the glorious figure stooped, and lifting in his arms the form broken with age, as though it had been but a child, he carried it slowly away over the mountains and the valleys into the very skies themselves. The wanderer had come home. He lay down in his father's house to sleep, conscious of the great compassion which he knew reached out to all creation. As he closed his eyes, he saw that the master he had loved so well was still regarding him with divine tenderness. The next day, when the storm had abated, the people of the village went out to search for the mystic they had loved, for they had followed his footsteps and knew that he lay somewhere in the wilderness of snow. They found his staff and the little package of herbs that he carried, but of him there was no sign. Sadly, they shook their heads and pointed to the great ravines and steep precipices and rushing waters beneath. For they did not know that the old man was at last one with the face he had sought.
This is the end of the recording on side one. Turn the cassette over to play side two.